All right.
Orange.
We'll call the Health and Human Services Budget Division back together for Tuesday, April 14th. We have two Senate files remaining on our agenda from this morning's session. For the record, we do still have a quorum left from this morning. We're going to take up Senate File 1771. Senator Dibble, welcome to the committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1771 provides some clarifying, mostly technical, and a couple of little changes to the medical cannabis law that was passed last year. It's kind of some remaining elements of a larger set of technical corrections, but decided to pursue some of the easier ones and the more complicated ones to work on perhaps next year. Very quickly, I'll walk through what they seek to do. There's basically some changes in dates and process and procedures to provide some clarification items that became evident as all the implementation elements
started. Senator Dibble, 1 second. I see people digging through their files. There is no fiscal note for this bill. Senator Dibble, we thought there may be some savings. We've been working with the Department of Health. There are no savings. The intent is to let this go to the floor. We do have the Department of Health here to confirm that. There's one additional amendment, I think, that I'm aware of that needs to be added to put the bill in shape. But if members looked confused digging through their packets, there is no fiscal. So just to make that clear. Senator Dibble, continue.
Well, there technically is a fiscal note, but it shows zero. So I guess that makes it there's a non-fiscal note. I have it here if folks want to see that.
I think that's for a House file, Senator Dibble. We run with Senate fiscal notes.
That is true.
I know.
But it's identical. So, Mr. Chair, very quickly, the bill would, in Section 1, provide for the manufacturer distributors to re-register with the agency, with the department, every 2 years rather than every year. That was a change, as was originally proposed when the original bill is introduced, from every 3 years. In Section 2, it deals with the subject of patients enrolling in the program, and it just ensures that application fees are received before enrollment is finalized. And it also provides for time standards so that patients' applications are approved within 30 days, other than in this initial startup phase, it allows for a 60-day period to finalize enrollment. And it also ensures that their registration is ended upon their demise. In Section 3, this just simply makes sure that the laboratories that the manufacturers are required to work with for quality control and a variety of testing purposes are already approved by the commissioner before they contract with those laboratories. Seems like a semantical change, but it's kind of a timing change just to make sure that the commissioner has approved of those laboratories before the manufacturers contract and begin to work with them. And then there is a required audit, so we're on to Section 4 on page 5, done every year, and it makes... Of course, it doesn't really make sense for that audit to occur this year, so the calendar year next year, January 2015, is when those required audits would commence. And then there is, the procedure that's provided for adding additional conditions, except that in the case of intractable pain, the law required that the commissioner the law is proactive in requiring that the commissioner take a look at intractable pain and then provide a recommendation on that. The way the addition of conditions works is that the commissioner has the authority to add conditions. However, the commissioner needs to wait, can't add a condition until the commissioner proposes to do so, and then gives a period of time for the legislature to meet and respond in some form or fashion. Legislature can be silent or do something else with that proposal by the commissioner. If the legislature is silent, then the condition would be added, or the legislature can do something else with that. On the subject of intractable pain, the agency is well into conducting its analysis and its work on that subject, and that will all be ready in time for the upcoming legislative session, and so that it simply moves that date up to January of next year, giving the January 2016 legislative session for the legislature to respond if it sees fit to do so. So that's the bill as proposed. I can pause for questions, or you can propose the A4 amendment.
Any questions of members at this point? Why don't you put the A4 amendment in front of us?
All right.
Senator Franzen moves the A4 amendment. On that amendment, Senator Gribble.
So is the A4 in your packet? All right.
We have the A4
okay.
in our
All right,
packet.
Thank you. So what the A4 would do is it would add to the definition of medical cannabis the plant form of cannabis prior to its being processed into the various forms which it is authorized to be used for medical purposes, only when in the possession or being handled by employees of either the laboratories or the manufacturers in the fulfillment of their employment duties, so that they would avoid committing a crime if they were handling cannabis plants, which of course they'd have to do in order to process it into the forms that are authorized for it to be ingested. So that's what that would accomplish.
So this is a pretty much technical something that was missed last year. I mean, if these manufacturers are actually going to produce the forms of medical cannabis that are allowed to be used, they have to be able to handle the plant form to convert it into what's just them.
Yeah, and that's just these individuals and just for this purpose.
Any questions of members on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Any further questions on Senate File 1771?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, in Section 20 on the intractable pain, the commissioner shall report findings on the need for adding intractable pain to the list of qualifying medical conditions. That didn't require a fiscal note? Could we have the department come up?
We do. Please? Someone from the Department of Health, Mr. Munson-Regala, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Manny Munson-Regala, Assistant Commissioner from the Department of Health. Senator Rosen, we have in our existing project plan, we planned on conducting our review and work by the end of December of this year already. The only thing that has changed in the amendment is the time frame for the commissioner to make his decision.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
We made an appropriation last year at the point at which we passed the bill, and this work, that appropriation funds this work, was done a little faster than anticipated.
Any further questions on the bill? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1771? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Sorry, but
no,
Senator Dibble. Okay, on the intractable pain, can you explain that again, how that works as far as the commissioner has the ability to explain how that works with the commissioner and adding more?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, so the commissioner has the authority to add any condition he or she sees fit. In this case, he, of course. However, you know, obviously, the commissioner should by all rights and maybe it's spelled out, undergo a process of analysis and you know, research, et cetera. And when he decides to add a condition to the list of qualifying medical conditions, he makes a report to the task force that we've established, and then also that needs to wait until it actually is effective and on the list until after the legislature has met in session.
Verified.
So the legislature could choose to say
no
or yes, and then some. I don't, you know, the legislature can do whatever the legislature wants, but it allows for a period of time for the legislature to act in some form or fashion.
Okay.
Legislature is silent, then the condition will go on the qualifying list of medical conditions. The bill that we did pass, however, did carve out, has this paragraph on intractable pain, requiring that be the first, because that was a source of a lot of focus and discussion. It's what a lot of other states allow for. We have a definition of intractable pain, so it's, you know, it's not like, ouch, my arm hurts. It's, you know, pretty serious matter. And so we required the commissioner to take a look at that condition first and do the research and analysis and the study and make the report to the task force. And then we gave this particular date of July 1st, 2016. Obviously, that would mean then if he's recommending to put it on the list, then it wouldn't go on until sometime mid-2016. If he's recommending to put it on the list, this would allow for it to go on the list sometime in mid-2016.
Any other questions of members? I mean, even if we didn't have that Section 5, I mean, presumably the commissioner could provide it in January, even if we didn't have that. This is just saying we'd like to have it early, and the commissioner has determined that they could provide it early. It's not a significant change to the law.
Good point.
I mean, because it's no later than July 1st, 2016. I mean, they've just said they're amenable to giving us the report in time to have deliberations in the 2016 session. Any further questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Franzen moves Senate File 1771 as amended be recommended to pass. And then with that, it would go to finance. We'd have the finance hearing for bills that were considered as to whether they had a fiscal implication or not. And this one didn't, and it would go from there to the floor. So on that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Last on our agenda is Senate File 273. And we just got the fiscal note as we were coming together, so we'll pass that out now and I'll go up and.
Senator Lurie.
Okay, Madam Chair and members, we have Senate File 273 here to present. This is a new payment system for nursing homes, and also included is some increases for elderly waiver recipients. You know, a little bit of history. We've probably since the 90s not actually gone back and set a payment system that was based on rates for nursing facilities. What we've done is just had the historic rate and on occasion, when we could afford it, put a percentage increase on top of the historic rates. Over that time, with shifts in power and influence around here, we've made some little tweaks here and there, adjusted a few dials, and it's really created some significant disparities around the state in how nursing facilities are paid. And it gets to a point where the system is just broken, and it's time to restructure the payment system and make it based on the actual costs of providing care and incorporating in it, whenever possible, it's important to me to include quality in the payment system that we devise. And so, you know, for several years, I've been trying to resist taking individual nursing facility requests for add-ons, because that's the same old, what's gotten us into this place with the terrible disparities. We have added a couple of important and needed percentage increases at times when we couldn't quite get the whole statewide restructuring, but what this proposal provides is a complete statewide restructuring based on the cost with a strong quality component. In preparation for our hearing in policy, Senator Sharon asked that this summary of the long-term care payment system was put together, and I find it very helpful rather than the dry technical coverage of the bill. This really gives you kind of a nuts and bolts of how it works, and so I'll use that to kind of guide my testimony, and I will refer you to the sections in the bill if you wish to review the actual sections that cover these pieces. So it really covers the four rate components in the total rate for the nursing facilities. It covers the manner in which it's covered under our current Medicaid rate setting formula, and then how Senate File 273 would set those rates. So the four rate components are the care-related rate, the other operating rate, the external fixed rate, and the property rate. So for the care-related rate, this is for nursing services, social services, activities, and food primarily. The current system under our APS system, the alternative payment system, care-related rates are based on the facility's historical rate and then, again, increased occasionally when we can afford it at the legislature. This new rate system would be based on the facility's recent costs of care as reported on the annual cost reports that facilities put together today. The care-related rate would be the lesser of the facility's costs or a limit. That limit is based on the cost of the facility in the same geographic area with an overall adjustment for quality score. This is also based on an existing quality measure that the industry is very familiar and comfortable with and thinks that it does do a good job of measuring the quality at each facility. The second rate component is the other operating rate. It pays for dietary staff, housekeeping, laundry, maintenance, utilities, and administration. Under our current system, this is, again, a historical rate increased occasionally when the legislature has the resources to do so. Under the new system proposed in Senate File 273, the other operating rates would be based on 100% of the recent median cost of all facilities in the same geographic area. I actually forgot to do what I said I would do and tell you which sections. This other operating rate is in sections 4 and 14 of the bill. The care-related rate, the first one that I covered, is in sections 7, 8, 9, 11, 12, and 13, if members are interested in trying to get into any of that detail. And we certainly can cover questions in more detail if needed. The external fixed rate is the third rate component. It pays for various components like property taxes, surcharge, license fees, closure incentives, public employee retirement, and employee scholarships. Currently, with some components annually adjusted for cost, such as scholarships and property taxes, and others a fixed amount, those would be surcharges and closure incentives. That's the current system. Under 273, most components of the external fixed rate would continue to be calculated as they are under current law, but the primary change is moving of employer health insurance costs into this component to assist employers in responding to the employer mandate requirements of the ACA. These external fixed rate changes can be found in sections 2, 5, 6, and 16 of the bill. And then the fourth rate component is the property rate, which pays for the cost of constructing and ongoing updating of the facility. For most facility, property rates are frozen as part of our current payment system. Facilities do have options for property projects and receiving a rate increase for them. Those increases are calculated using the formulas in statute in 256B.431. That's the, why am I drawing a blank on that name? The moratorium exception process. There it is. I knew it was there somewhere. The new system, at the time of implementing this new operating rate, no change is proposed for property rates, but the bill has placeholder language asking the department to develop a new property rate system in 2016, and it's still under development. That is, it can be found in Section 3 of the bill. Additionally, I mentioned that elderly waiver per person cap is lifted. That is found in, is not lifted, but it is changed. That's found in Section 1. Currently, it's based on the home and community-based percentage rate increase given by the legislature, but it doesn't increase if we don't increase home and community-based, but do increase nursing facilities. So what this says is that in any given year, it would be the elderly waiver per person cap would be the greater of the home and community-based percentage rate increase or the statewide average nursing facility percentage increase through this new payment system. Additionally, in sections 10 and 18 are hold harmless provisions so that no facility would lose revenue and have their rates actually cut. There is a specialized care facilities component in Section 15, which increases by 50% the total care-related limit for specialized care facilities. Those are the Rule 80 facilities and the facility in Robbinsdale. Also, Section 17 calls for an inflation factor to move the costs from the cost report year to the current payment year. I think there's a 2 years of inflation added to get it to the current year. And then one issue that we still had open when we had the last hearing was what's historically when we did a percentage increase, we would have what we commonly referred to as encumbrance language. But that type of structure really for facilities that had an organized workforce, but that structure really didn't work well when we're building a whole new system. It was really kind of difficult to get at. And but it's been something that was actually pretty important to the legislature. When we give increases, we want to see that it's going to the workers, and we want to make sure that it works for the workers. And so labor and the industry have been sitting down and working very hard for a very long time, and we have the A5 amendment, which it is my understanding everyone agrees to. So I will move the A5 amendment, have a discussion of it. You know, maybe given that it's fairly new, maybe I could ask somebody else to describe it so I don't go astray. I don't know who'd be the best, but this is to address that issue regarding making sure that the wages increase.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff Bostic with Leading Age Minnesota here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative, who's, as the Senator mentioned, we've worked with some union representatives on language to address some of their concerns as we move into this new system in terms of how it would work. It is a different process than in the past when you're not adding an increase on top of an existing rate. The rate is recalculated every year based on what your costs were for a couple of years ago. So the cost report is kind of the key driver of what your rate is going to be. And so the question became for organized facilities or organized portions of facilities, because typically the entire facility wouldn't necessarily be organized or not organized by the same bargaining unit. What is their role in that, in that rate setting process? So we came to an agreement that we all think is pretty fair to everyone. And essentially, it says that when you're filing the cost report with DHS, that if any of those costs are for, and all of this applies now just to union employees, so if you kind of narrow it down to that, if any of your costs are subject to a to an active, approved collective bargaining agreement, they all count as part of the cost report. And there is some time lag here, so if there's like negotiations dragging on where there's not a contract, you do have an opportunity to settle it. There's actually a timeline laid out so that if you settle it by a certain date, you can still get costs added into your next rate that's coming out based on that cost report. Unions can also authorize that costs be recognized without a contract. The sort of remedy here is if there is a bargaining unit in place and they don't come to an agreement by the deadline here, you don't get a rate increase for costs related to those employees in your next rate. So and I think it's something that, you know, both sides are comfortable with, you know, the idea that they can come to an agreement in time to make that work. It's, like I said, something we're comfortable with and something that the unions are comfortable with.
Senator Lurie, I understand there's no cost related to the amendment itself.
No, there's no cost related to the amendment. But I think that an important thing to note is it was mentioned that there would be no increase related to those costs for that segment that is organized. But it's not that that segment would be removed from the cost. What you'd be doing is using the last year's costs for that portion of the workforce that was operating without a contract. So you still have those costs built in, but just not the year for which it would be an additional lag that doesn't get the inflation built in and sort of an incentive to make sure that folks are bargaining with faith and working together. So everyone seems to be comfortable with the A5 amendment, and that's a good place to be, I think. So I would move the A5 amendment.
Any further questions or discussion from members? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lurie, what is the collective bargaining scene in Minnesota as far as long-term care facilities? How many facilities are under the collective bargaining?
20%.
Senator Lurie?
About 20% of the workforce is organized.
And that, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Lurie, I can't think of one facility in my district, but maybe I'm off on that. So is it mostly Metro?
Senator Lurie?
No, there's
some
organized facilities all around the state. AFSCME has some. SEIU has some. United Food and Commercial Workers. There's, as was mentioned, there's organizing entities out there working with employees, and they organize pieces of a home. So, I mean, you probably do. I'd be surprised if you didn't have some homes that had components that had labor.
Maybe.
We can follow up, though. I mean,
no, fine. I'm just wondering.
Any further questions or discussion from members? Seeing none, Senator Lurie moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion carries. The amendment is adopted. Senator Lurie.
So then real quick on the cost, I mean, I'll just jump right to the first page. $205 million for the 17 biennium, $385 18-19 sales. And when you delay something as long as we have, there are some significant costs involved in trying to bring it up to date. Just stepping through, again, I just got this. I noticed the elderly waiver on page 5 of 8. About $18 million of those costs, and the alternative care, about $1.6 million of costs on the following page, page 6. So, for Section 1, which is that elderly waiver, the caps for the per-person spending limit is about $19.8 million. The nursing facility pieces at the top of page 7 are about $176 million. And there's a table that kind of works you through the formulas and things that are, I'm sure are defined in better detail in the verbiage, but that's about as far as I've gone in absorbing it at this point.
Senator Rosen, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lori, when this came through policy, I believe, we talked about the critical access nursing home. If you had done anything that is, does that still in play, or have you done any?
I haven't made any decisions to anything in this. So critical access nursing
is it?
I believe is $4 million a year, and it is ongoing money. And if we were able to do this, I think that the rationale for it would be pretty much eliminated, and so we could reduce the cost by that and use it as an offset. But if we're unable to get terribly close to this, we're significantly under this. I don't know at what point there's a tipping point where the rationale for that still is needed. There's also a percentage increase in that's scheduled to go in place in October, 2.4%. I don't know the value of that. I don't know if that could help us mitigate some of this fiscal note as well. That's a possibility. We'll have to be working on some alternatives. I don't think anybody expects we'll be able to fit this entire ask into our bill.
Senator Lori, I have a question, too, if you can elaborate a little bit on the external fixed rate and the new rate as it relates to the ACA. I know I heard from nursing facilities that this was a big cost, so how are we addressing it? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. So, again, what we'd be doing is moving that employer health insurance cost into the external fixed rate, which is paid to recognize costs. So we would be paying for the costs that facilities incur for providing the required health insurance or paying the penalty if they don't provide the health insurance if they're considered a large employer and subject to that penalty. That is a cost that I believe we need to recognize.
So do you know what the actual cost of that piece is? Because I remember as well, the penalty was one thing, whether that was the best move for nursing facilities to just pay the penalty versus the actual cost of providing health care. What can you also address that, if what decision was made there? And if that's the cost reflected in the fiscal note, which one it would be?
Take a stab at this. And DHS may be able to provide a little bit more clarification, but in being somewhat familiar with the work they've done in developing the fiscal note, a couple of answers to your question. The fiscal note is based on, because we're modeling based on available cost reports, is based on moving current health insurance, employer health insurance costs into external fixed. So that gives an idea of what the impact is, and that is what goes into these numbers here. Now, that doesn't account for increased costs due to the ACA because of the time lag, because people are starting to make some of those decisions now, and that's not, those costs are to some extent unknown. No one's paid any penalties yet. And if they've been enhancing their plans, that hasn't been captured yet by the cost information. But we have, our DHS has modeled moving health insurance into external fixed. One of the reason, the policy reasons for doing that, we have these different components of the rate, and that one's kind of an odd one because it includes a number of different things, and it seems like these are costs that could be under care related or other operating or whatever. The policy reason for making that change is that external fixed is cost-based, as the senator said, and it's not subject to a limit. So our thinking was that, we wouldn't want an increase in employer health insurance costs to put someone over the limit, since to some extent under the ACA structure, health insurance costs on some level are a mandate that people have to absorb as employers.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions from members? Seeing none, any further discussion? Senator Lurie?
If there's no further discussion, I'd move Senate File 273 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Finance Bill.
On Senator Lurie's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. The Senate File 273 is passed as amended. It laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member.
We stand adjourned. Have a good evening.
Thanks, Senator.
Yeah.
Big one.